Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters, our new Saturday morning agricultural news program. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Hello, folks. We're far enough into the year that it's not new anymore. We're far enough into the China trade war that it's not fun anymore. And we're far enough into the government shutdown that folks are getting real upset that what they took for granted is being cut short by people fighting about politics. This country is a democracy. It's supposed to be of the people, by the people, and for the people. So no matter which side you're on, we just need to round up all the politicians and drive them the way we want to go. Like they did to the bovines in the TV show Rawhide. Clint Eastwood, before he made anyone's day.
Keep rolling, rolling, rolling.
Before he had a fistful of dollars.
Keep them doggies rolling rawhide. Through rain and wind and weather. Hell bent for leather. Wishing my gal was by my side.
Before he played that god-awful role in Bridges of Madison County.
I waited at the end of my ride.
Okay, my head's clear. I hope the same for you. We have more problems out there in farm country right now than drovers had on the Chisholm Trail. First up, getting the USDA to open up so farmers can do business. And trying to keep African swine fever out of the U.S. of A. It's killed a million pigs in China, and it's in the wild boars of Europe and Asia. On a gentler note, we can talk about reestablishing monarch butterfly populations that farmers wiped out by killing milkweed. It was collateral damage, but one of the most beautiful migratory organisms on Earth needs a chance to survive. A little story on how you, your kids, your local school, and grandma's flower garden can help.
And if the sleep has left your ears, you might hear footsteps running through an open meadow. Don't be concerned.
We'll get the real news out there first. This is Weekend Ag Matters on AM 1540. KXEL, the blowtorch of Waterloo, a production of the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Education is a big part of the annual Iowa Pork Congress, which will be January 23rd and 24th in Des Moines. There are 9 seminars and 3 certification sessions. Learn how you can be prepared for the latest swine health issues. Listen to the economic outlook for 2019 and discover how your pork checkoff is leading to put more pork on the menu. Join us for the Iowa Pork Congress January 23rd and 24th at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines. Visit iowaporkcongress.org for details. Seminars and trainings are funded by the Pork Checkoff.
Data is data is data. Unless you work with FS, then your data comes with expert insight. Tapping into a wide range of technologies through MyField, your FS crop specialist evaluates trial data from your farm, along with only the most qualified aggregated data that reveals trends in your area. With MyField, your FS crop specialist delivers the insights you need to build your ROI. Learn how results from FS nitrogen trials can be applied to your farm at fsmyfield.com. FS, bringing you what's next.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
China reported this week that almost 1 million pigs have been infected with African swine fever, or at least that's the number that's been euthanized and removed from the food chain. The disease is called durable by veterinarians because it can spread even over a cold winter. That's the fear right now in both Eastern and Western Europe. Anna Hastert, digital editor for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, is following the threat of African swine fever worldwide. Hello, Anna.
Good morning, Ken.
What's the latest on getting control of African swine fever in China and Europe?
The control of African swine fever in China and Europe has proven really difficult. We've heard multiple cases from China of new cities and new provinces reporting more and more cases of this disease spreading across that nation. And in Europe in particular, it's really hard for them because it's infected their feral hog population. And feral hogs in Europe are hunted for sport, so they have increased their hunts of feral hog populations, but it just spreads so quickly. So in Belgium, recently, within the last week or so, they've actually had to expand their control zone for African swine fever virus because the feral hog population has migrated in a different direction outside of their control zone. So it just keeps spreading and spreading, and there is no signs of control so far.
You know, with Europe, their view of these wild boars is as a elite hunting experience. And so there's many people there that want to keep as many as they can. It's sort of like duck hunting in Arkansas in this country. But of course, they're the ones who are carrying this disease. And that is becoming very concerning, as I understand it, to the domestic swine industry in Europe. But let's turn to what we really care about, and that's the U.S. pork industry. What are they doing to try to keep this virus from entering our country?
Right, Ken. So like you stated, African swine fever virus has not reached the United States as of yet. There's multiple methods put into play here to go about controlling that virus and making sure that it stays overseas in Europe and China. So once African swine fever was confirmed in China back in August, the National Pork Board, as well as the National Pork Producers Council, Swine Health Information Center, and American Association of Swine Veterinarians went to Washington, D.C. to speak to the U.S. Chief Veterinarian Officer. And during that discussion, they talked about multiple things that they would like to see to help curb this virus and prevent it from entering the United States. So one of the things that they talked about was creating more border security. And when I talk about border security or border awareness, we're talking about areas where meat products or any contaminated fomites of the virus might be able to enter into the country. So one area in particular that we've seen more of a crackdown or more control over are airports, because we're really worried about that virus coming in from Asia. So at airports, they're making sure to check over cargo as well as tourists to make sure they're not bringing any meat products that they're not supposed to be. Seeing more security at airports. And if you see little beagles running around the airports, that's more than likely what they're there for. They're there to sniff out those meat products and make sure they're not contaminating the U.S. swine population. So airport security. Another thing that they've talked about is additional diagnostic capabilities. So they're talking about, you know, the African swine fever virus is kind of hard to confirm in populations. And usually when producers do notice that their herd has been infected by this virus, it's too late. It's already taken control over the pig and they're more than likely to see a death loss. Those countries that have confirmed African swine fever virus have reported between 60 to 80% total death loss in their herds and their domestic swine herd because of this virus. And it could actually be more than what they're reporting there too. So that's scary. So we're talking about additional diagnostic capabilities here. So if it were to enter the United States, then there'll be other methods for taking samples to diagnose the virus in swine. Those methods include like a saliva or oral fluid sampling, just to make it easier for the producer to confirm that they do actually, in fact, have African swine fever in their population. The National Pork Board, I recently spoke with them, with other industry proponents, have some crisis and prevention plans in place. Two of them are currently active, and those plans focus on producers and consumers. The first plan is looking at working with ASF now before it gets into the United States, looking at what producers can do to make sure that their premises are secure and what we need to be telling our producers, as in, you know, the African swine fever virus does not affect the pork supply, and just talking about some of the concerns that they may have with this virus that's a little bit scary. So more information about how you can protect your swine herd if African swine fever were to enter into the United States, or just even before that point, you can visit www.pork.org. Plenty of information there on how you can protect your hog population and what you can do in the case of African swine fever outbreak in the United States.
Okay, Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken.
All right, we'll be back with more in a moment.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
The continuation of the federal government partial shutdown is going on to 1 month, and it's beginning to reach more Americans who really didn't think they were closely attached to the government. The USDA is one of the agencies impacted, with many employees being furloughed, and others, like meat inspectors, working without pay. Farmers interact most with the USDA's Farm Service Agency on payments, loans, and some parts of compliance. So the Secretary of Agriculture made an interesting decision at midweek. Dustin Hoffman, our supervising farm broadcaster and reporter, is with me. Dustin, Secretary Perdue has tried to stay out in front of problems caused by the shutdown. What's the latest?
Well, Ken, the latest here is that they have authorized 2,500 FSA employees to return to work here. They're only going to be authorized to return for 3 days, and that is has been Thursday and Friday, January 17th and 18th. And then they'll be back again on Tuesday the 22nd. That's right now the only 3 days they're going to have employees back.
Well, you know, if they're not working for pay, I would think they could hire them every day.
Yeah, that would probably work for that for the government, but not so much for the people having to do the work.
Yeah, you know, this isn't funny. I said in one of my reports earlier in the week, thank those people for coming in. They're there to do a job. You're there to do a job, and it's too bad that the government closure is getting in the way of that. What functions can't the FSA do for farmers during the closure?
Well, what they can't do right now is process anything for 2019. You can't do any signups for ARC or PLC. You can't do any farm bill stuff with the new farm bill, any of the dairy programs, nothing like that here at all for 2019. They're basically just putting the bow on the business that had to be finished in 2018.
Now, could they turn in information to prove their total production on corn, soybeans, and other crops from 2018?
They are not doing any new certifications on the MFP program at this time. Again, that deadline has passed. It was supposed to be on Tuesday. The secretary, of course, said he would extend that for as many business days as the FSA offices were closed once the government shutdown ends. But they are not doing any new certifications on those for the MFP program.
They are open, but you've only got a smaller menu of things that they can do for you. And they can't do any loans either, can they?
No, they can only work on loans, processing anything with the loans from 2018. What they also can do is, if you've gotten any checks, for commodities sold that bear the FSA's name on the check as well, you can bring those in to the offices and get them signed. And they will also be there to get you any tax documents you need, because obviously tax season is going to keep rolling forward, and they're going to have to pay the IRS whether the government is shut down or not. And obviously those tax documents are needed as well. And they'll be doing that. And one thing I found interesting is that they added to the official list of duties they'll be performing on this limited basis is opening their mail.
Well, they've got almost a month of it, so that probably is one of the things they need to do. Farmers probably don't want to go in and just drink coffee with them, although I'm sure that they will probably all have a subject in common that they can talk about, and that is this government shutdown. There's no projection of an end to it. Some people are projecting end of February. I wonder what the Secretary of Agriculture is thinking here, because we've also got the issue of getting the money appropriated for food stamps. There's a whole lot of problems that are growing, aren't they, as we move to a longer and longer shutdown?
Yes, that is true. Senator Grassley touched on that during his weekly call with ag reporters on Tuesday, saying that, you know, we have 39, 40 million people on the SNAP program that, you know, right now, yes, they've got funding for February, but we better come up with something soon for March. He was very adamant about making sure that those funds are secured.
How many offices are open in Iowa for Farm Service Agency, and how can people find out which ones they are?
We have 37 offices that are going to be opening in Iowa, or are open in Iowa right now. There is a list on our website. You can find that at iowaagnet.com. In the story we do about the FSA returning to work on a limited basis, there's a link to that, or you can also search that with the USDA website as well. Again, only 37 counties will have FSA offices open during this limited basis in Iowa.
Dustin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to keep my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch.
There has been a casualty of the weed war. It's the monarch butterfly. We used to see more than we do now because herbicides killed off common milkweed. And that is the plant monarchs have to survive. However, it's believed that we can bring the creatures back by restoring their habitat. I spoke with Chip Schilling, Sustainability Manager for BASF. He gives the name of a website you might want to visit to learn more after the show. Chip, let's talk about the monarch butterfly and the situation we're in right now. I don't think anybody in agriculture deliberately tried to kill off the monarch butterfly, but it appears to me about every herbicide out there will kill milkweed. What's the connection?
Sure. So yeah, herbicides do control weeds. When you think about an agricultural field and the use of herbicides, the purpose of using a herbicide in that case is to eliminate the field from your productive area. So they certainly do control it in field, but when you start to think outside of field boundaries, that's where we're really talking to a lot of folks about, you know, where they can reestablish milkweed or maybe protect the milkweed that they've got.
I think it's amazing that this butterfly in its migration, the butterfly that leaves Mexico doesn't get that far, and the generations here in the U.S. don't get that far either, and yet there is a migration that continues. How is that possible?
They're amazing little insects if you think about it. So there's that one generation that you're talking about that's called the super generation that does that last long migration down to Mexico, down into the oymel forests that are a little bit west-northwest of Mexico City. They'll overwinter there and then start that journey back north again. So they have a lifespan of anywhere from, let's say, 6 months or so on average. And then those successive generations, when they start to make it up into Iowa and up into the upper Midwest and even into southern Canada, those generations are much shorter, anywhere from, you know, a month and a half to 2 months. So they are pretty amazing creatures. One of the ways I like to get people to think about, you know, their amazing migration is if I said, go find your grandparents' homestead, but you don't have a map, you don't know where they actually lived, and there's no GPS and there's nobody you can call. So they really are amazing little creatures.
What are we facing on the front end if we were to continue without regard to the monarch? What could happen in a regulatory fashion?
That's really up for discussion. So right now, the monarch is being evaluated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service under the Endangered Species Act. And they're supposed to make a determination sometime mid-next year. So what comes of that, I don't know. I don't know anybody has any clue at this point in time. That's still under review by the Fish and Wildlife Service. But the critical part here is thinking about what can farmers and other people that live across the monarch's breeding and migration range, what can they be doing? And I think part of what's in their control really is how can they plant milkweed or preserve the milkweed that they have, as well as think of other nectar-producing flowers in the spring, summer, and especially the fall, to provide that fuel for the adult monarch.
Can you tell me some successes of projects that have been done either by individuals, schools, or other groups?
Sure. So with BASF, we have something that's called the Living Acres Monarch Challenge that we launched back in 2015. And really what that is about, it's about education, research, and and reaching out into farmers and the farming community to talk about the important role that they can play in helping to restore the monarch population. So it's been a great success for us. We've toured, I had the privilege of really touring the country last year, talking to farmers from Missouri and Texas all the way up into the Dakotas, talking about the role that milkweed plays and what they can do on farm to protect habitat they may already have or reintroduce it. So that's a program that we're continuing again this year. We really get people to sign up at monarchchallenge.com. And again, we'll be providing free milkweed plant to the first 1,000 farmers and farm families that sign up again sometime probably by mid-May.
Not seeds, but plants?
Correct. So if you think about seeds, milkweed seeds require cold stratification. So if you had milkweed pods or if you're interested, you can certainly purchase milkweed seeds now and spread them out while you have Mother Nature to do the cold stratifying. But we provide those live plants. They're a little bit more, going to be a little bit more successful and competitive against maybe established plants that are in that area or grasses. And two, we just don't find that milkweed seeds have a high success rate of germination. So for us, this is a quick way to start getting milkweed back into those areas where farmers and farm families think that milkweed can thrive on their farms.
Will this draw in any other either beneficial or colorful insects?
Absolutely. So if you think about flowering milkweed, it's a great nectar source also for bees. So you'll see other bees, whether native or managed, that will come to the milkweed plants once they flower, which is usually in the second or third year after they've been established. So they may not flower that first or second year, but after that, they should start to see the flowers come through. But there are a lot of other milkweed-specific bugs that you might see, but that aren't going to be a pest to other plants that you might have or crops that you might have that they're around.
How can people get in touch with BASF and be able to consider what they can do in the coming summer season?
Sure. So there are the one website that I would definitely point them toward is monarchchallenge.com. So there you'll find a link to sign up to receive free milkweed again next spring. I guess this spring, since it already is January, which is a little surprising. So we'll be sending out free milkweed plant middle of May this year. And there you'll find other resources that are available. So we've also tried to take a little bit of the guessing game out of the USDA plant database by thinking about what's native specifically in Iowa and the rest of the states in the U.S. that are beneficial to the monarch. So it talks about the native milkweed plants, which are really important to think about planting what's native, as well as other flower species that are going to bloom spring, summer, and fall to provide that fuel for the adult monarch.
Chip, thank you very much for talking with us. Chip Schilling, Sustainability Manager for BASF. We appreciate you talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it as well.
That's our show for this week. Could you let us know you're out there? In over 3 months of doing this Saturday morning program, I haven't gotten one piece of hate mail. No one has condemned my commentary, denigrated my dialogue, or insulted my intellect. So send your condemnation or compliments to kenroot@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, where Anna and Dustin put real information every day, iowaagnet.com. Or call BR549 to receive a message of hope from Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi. Ha! We may see you next week. The jury's still out on that. But tune in anyway. They may put Rush Limbaugh on in this time slot. This is Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
My father was a Democrat and mother was Republican. There were lots of arguments at our house, but it was always fun. Us kids would listen, we always knew what went on in Washington. My father was a Democrat and mother was Republican. Now Dad would talk about Roosevelt and how he saved us all. Mom would bluster socialism, gonna cause our fall. Then she'd say those Democrats know how to tax and spend. Dad would say Republicans, they just borrow and spend. Then he'd say Republicans are always digging up dirt. Mom would counter, Democrats are always chasing skirts. Dad would chuckle and say those things are just Republican slurs. Anyway, didn't seem to mind when I was chasing yours. Mom would blush and say, Bill Clinton, now tell me he's not slick. Dad would mention Richard Nixon and call him Tricky Dick. My father was a Democrat and mother was Republican. There were lots of arguments at our house, but it was always fun. Us kids would listen, we always knew what went on in Washington. My father was a Democrat and mother was Republican.